Hey guys, it's Jonathan Wall, golf's managing editor for Equipment and one third of the Fully Equipped crew. If you didn't know it by now, the US Open is kicking off today at Wingfoot, considered by many to be one of the most brutal tests in golf. Of the players in the field, one name that keeps coming up as a likely choice to tame the Tillinghast gem is Jon Rahm. The 25-year-old Spaniard has been on a tear since the tour restarted in May, recording two wins and briefly ascending to number one in the world. If Rahm is going to realize a dream this week and win his first major, he'll need the tools in his bag to cooperate. Which brings us to his TaylorMade gear. In a special edition of Fully Equipped, I had the chance to speak with TaylorMade Tour rep Adrian Rietveld about Rahm's gear, what it's really like to work with the big unit, and his tiger-like tendencies when it comes to fairway woods. It's the most in-depth look you'll find into the gear used by one of the best players in the world. If you want to see all of Rahm's club specs, be sure to check out golf.com for a complete gear rundown, all the way down to where Rahm likes the hot melt position in his driver. And with that, let's get to my interview with Adrian. Enjoy the episode. All right. Well, we're doing things differently for this week's interview on Fully Equipped. We're going to dig into some of the bags of the best players in the world and kind of see what makes them tick. And, you know, there are two guys right now I think that golf fans are really interested in. One is Dustin Johnson, for obvious reasons, just coming off his FedEx Cup win. The other is Jon Rahm, who, you know, has a pretty interesting bag setup. And to me, there's nobody better to talk to about Jon Rahm's gear than TaylorMade Tour rep Adrian Rietveld. Adrian, what's going on, man? How are you?
How you doing, John? All good, man.
Appreciate you popping on. I know you were in Napa doing some work like you always are, working with some of the best players in the world. But I want to talk about a guy who is going to be one of the big names at the U.S. Open, Jon Rahm. I know you've worked with Rahm. Do you recall the first time that you did some work with him, and was there anything that kind of stuck out from that very first interaction?
We go way back. So I guess my path to the PGA Tour came through Europe, and I work predominantly on the European Tour. Jon Rahm being one of those players that would jump between the two tours quite a lot. He's got quite an affection for the European Tour. But so really, when guys like John or DJ or Rory or these guys came to Europe, it was my baby to kind of make sure that they were set up and looked after. And that was kind of, if John was playing, I was by his side all week. Keith would definitely help me out and assist me from a US side, because Keith would have done most of the work with him over here. I mean, I remember being on the range at Wentworth. I'd never met Jon Rahm. And Keith telling me at the back of the range, we were just talking players, and he said to me, we got Jon. We got Jon. And he was buzzing about this. You know, he was like, you know, that's all that matters to him right now. And I hadn't even met Jon yet. So now all of a sudden my next thing was I was going to meet the guy, and yeah, like my first impressions of him when I met him was like, he first comes across like he was a little overweight, but when you actually get close to him, this guy is an absolute brick, and you see the strength and the power. He's just a real big, strong human being, and then you start to, you know, when you, his answers are quite short, quite abrupt, and he kind of means what he says. Doesn't beat around the bush or anything. Yeah, I guess those are kind of my first interactions with him. But then Jon would come over and play a lot, and we kind of, he's absolutely lost in us. With his caddy, his equipment, and us. So we all kind of work together, you know, so it's kind of like a seamless process, and so you do actually spend a lot of time with him when he's at an event, where you can get some players like you know, like a Rory or a Tiger, where you know they're playing that week, but you hardly see him. I think John's a bit different. John's always kind of working on something, So I guess that's a medium length answer to that. But yeah, I was you knew he was going to be a number one player in the world. That's for sure.
You know, I know Jon hasn't been out on tour for very long, but how was he when it came to conducting testing when he first came out on tour, and has he changed at all in the way that he likes to conduct testing? Is he comfortable kind of doing it throughout the year? Does he kind of pick a time when he likes to work on gear?
Yeah, he's really tough with equipment. When I say very, like, really tough, I'm, in terms of proving to him that certain types of equipment can benefit his game, really validated with him. He's gotten into a rhythm of, they come to our photo shoot, and we've got this kind of process where the guys see the stuff for the first time at the photo shoot. And I feel like that's really helped John, because it's just a photo shoot. We're showing our new product, we're showing off our new bells and whistles, and he's got these 2 or 3 days to just explore this equipment, you know, as he wishes. When John plays a tournament, John is there to win the tournament, and he means business before he gets there. Something worth noting is a lot of the tournaments that John's won, and it's like a running joke with us inside of TaylorMade, he's actually visited the kingdom before he's left for the tournament. So it's kind of like yeah, we've got like a run going, or we've got like a pattern going, or whatever. But yeah, he lives in Arizona, and the kingdom's not, you know, it's just a stop on the way to wherever he's going. So that's kind of become his wheelhouse of, you know, if he wants to work on his putting, or if he wants to do something, and it really entails equipment, he will visit us at the kingdom, and he'll get it done there. Now the other thing is when he gets to a course, and he gets on the golf course. So then you'll start to do equipment work with him on a Tuesday, or when he comes off on a Tuesday afternoon, because he's seen something on the golf course that means business, and equipment is the way to help him through it. You know, so for example, you know, you can, if you speak to John, and you ask him about a three-wood, he always brings up the story of us working for half a day at the Masters on the range. And I mean, that's the last place you're doing equipment work, right? You know, the reps, it's tough to get the access. It's you know, it's, you're only allowed on the range for a certain amount of time. But you know, he'll tell you about that story, and that's John. You know, that's John. If something needs to get done, he'll do it. He has no... he doesn't hold on to anything. He has no allegiance to, you know, I've played this for the last 2 years or 3 years or 6 months. You know, if he needs to change something, he'll do it.
Is he the kind of guy, I know some, I think about Rory, for instance, he can verbalize a lot of the things that he's seeing, feeling, hearing. Is John kind of more of the verbal, or is he more the kind who just, He's got to see, you know, if he sees it, he feels it, passes the eye test, it's going in the bag. Does he kind of fall into one camp versus the other?
He's got to see it. He's got to see it and feel it and hit it and watch it fly. He's got to, and it's got to be very specific in terms of what he's seeing and the windows. And, you know, he doesn't talk. It's funny because you get these players who talk a lot about, we would call it the miss. How good can we make the miss? You know, what's the miss? That's very common on tour. I've never heard John talk about that. I've never heard John, you know, unless he's trying to fix something, he'll tell you, this is what's happening, fix it. And Keith and I will kind of work together, or Keith will call me over, or I'll call Keith over, and we'll fix that mess. But other than that, when fitting equipment, when giving feedback on equipment, he hardly talks about, you know, the negative part of the equipment.
Now, you mentioned the for John being able to feel it, to see it, to hear it. How much does he kind of balance that side of it with the TrackMan numbers? Does he rely a lot on TrackMan when he's doing his testing?
So John has a TrackMan. John has a GC quad as well. So he's not reluctant to dive into technology but I would say his balance point on that is probably going to be 20% TrackMan technology, 80% none of it.
Right.
It's him. He knows what he needs. He knows what's right. I mean, these things they help him a lot with yardages. We worked out. I mean, he won Memorial. We put a lot down to him working out what we needed to do with his yardages, and that was using the quad and understanding the difference between TrackMan and quad. But I would say that TrackMan quad is more of a tool for us to help him,
right,
rather than a tool for him to to look into and help himself. Yeah, I mean he uses it with pleasure, and he looks at it with pleasure, and he does rely on people like Keith and myself a lot, in terms of if he doesn't understand something, he will question, he will ask, he will find the answers. But I think that's one reason why he does work really well with Keith is, Keith's very, I'm a very technical, like I'm an engineer type of person. You know what I mean? I understand the golf swing.
So let's dive into his gear. He uses a TaylorMade Sim driver, 10.5 degrees. Also uses the Sim 3-wood and a 5-wood. But one of the things that sticks out to me about these three clubs is he uses the same Alder Latour Green 75 TX shaft in the driver and in the 3-wood. Is he inclined when let's say for like testing Sim, is he going to test any other shafts, or is it basically this is the shaft, fit me for the right head and get the loft right?
He's used the, I mean, he's that shaft since college. It's he's tested variations of the shaft, but he doesn't feel, or he hasn't seen anything that's worth switching into for sure. So when it comes to fitting him, it's to show him performance enhancements in equipment, you're going to need to do it very exact for him. So for example, the way it's worked with John, we've said, okay, this is our new Sim head. These are the advantages of playing this head versus say your previous M5 head. And in order to prove that, every other variable of the golf club needs to be exactly the same. So we're only comparing the head versus the head. And we're also able to kind of, understand the difference in the head for John. If we can set these clubs up with exactly the same specs, and I'm going down to head weight, lie, I mean everything, and one cuts a little bit more than the other, we know that for John, this is what that head does versus the other one, and we can then start to alter the golf club to help John get the performance out of the new product. He doesn't give it much time, man. He won't give, like, I've tested shafts with John. It's two shots, man. It's two shots. It's three shots. It feels something that's not what he wants to feel. And I don't think things feel bad or good to him. They just feel different. And that's not, no, John doesn't like different. I don't think we've been able to put John in a shaft where he's seen a significant change, which has made him think about changing it. The difference between the 3-wood and the driver is obviously the 3-wood is tipped 1.5 inches, the driver's tipped 1 inch. The lengths are different, so that's why the tipping's different. When we take a real deep dive here into John's equipment, you will notice how neutral everything is.
That's what I was gonna point out. Very little change to the weight setup.
Yes, you will notice how neutral everything is, and like for example, his fairway woods are on the upright side of the sleeve. They're not on the upright side of the sleeve because he needs them more upright to kind of turn them over. They're on the upright side of the sleeve because that's his lie angle for a neutral setting. He's a tall guy. He's a big guy. The 3-wood's 43.5. The 5-wood's 42 cut, which is, which is probably an inch shorter than say half an inch shorter than your average kind of 5 foot length on tour. But he's a tall guy. So what do you do to a line goal? You make it upright. It's not rocket science with a ball striker like that. But if you start to go into it, you actually see how he's found neutral and everything. When you look at with talking about the shafts, that's kind of where we at with that. But yeah, it's the three wood. I would be surprised if John ever moved away from playing the same shaft in his driver and three wood, because he likes that.
And he also plays the same weight, so he's looking for a similar feel.
In swing weight.
Swing weight.
Absolutely, yeah.
How many guys do you have that you work with that kind of live by that sort of a setup, trying to get things very similar with those two clubs?
So Sergio, 100%.
Yeah, that was one that I was thinking about.
Geez, he finds a three wood in a good shaft. He's within a few weeks, his driver and his other club, they're in the same shaft. Most guys, I feel, especially the top players, they try do that. They try get that way, but it doesn't always happen, you know. So and that's what, and I think that's what players have to accept is to find the right equipment, and it's not a complete science. Sometimes they end off in a different shaft in their five wood and their three wood, but I would say from the real top guys, I would say they desire it. They desire it. It's a clean setup, but it doesn't always happen. Actually, really, to be honest, I think it very rarely that it happens like very clean.
Does he do anything to the internal geometry of the driver, adding hot melt? I know a lot of players use it to kind of, get things where they want without having to do anything to the external. Does he do anything internally?
So. Historically, John's always been like the high MOI guy. So you've kind of, if you go back to kind of M2, M4, M6, so we would have like our adjustable model and we'd have like our, non-adjustable model. He would always be that guy, the M2 guy. But he's now kind of evolved into like the other, more of the adjustable guy. So, to answer your question, John's plays the sim, he plays a 10-5 head, but it is set up in a way where the weight is more back.
Okay.
Our standard back weight in the sim driver is a 10 gram weight. He's got a 14 gram weight in the back there. We tend to use, to get it to weight, we'll probably use a little bit of hot melt, 3 or 4 grams, helps the sound a little bit, but for him it's more kind of just getting that swing weight perfect, you need to put 3 grams in here, so we'll put it in the right place. So John likes to move the ball left to right off the tee. So we spoke earlier about how neutral everything kind of has to be. So now what John will do then is then the sliding weight in the front, he will move it slightly towards the toe. So because of the desired shot shape he wants, not because he's trying to stop something, or he's very neutral. That's what he wants to happen. And when you go back to the older models that he's played, from the M2, and we've always put the hot melt slightly toe side as well. It's a clean progression, and he is gaining performance out of the new latest and greatest in terms of technologies and that type of stuff. But the setup is very clean, and it does complement his ball flight.
Rory mentioned to me one time about the most difficult club for him to get out of the bag is the fairway wood, 3 wood, 5 wood. When you find something you like, at least for him, it's tough to get out of the bag. How's Rom when it comes to testing fairways, especially when he's using something that he really likes and something new comes out? Is he a little bit more kind of, I don't know about that, or is he pretty inclined to just test it and make a switch if it feels good?
He's very very tough. I mean, and I think it stems from he in his early days, in his college days, and as he was coming up through the ranks, he really struggled with fairways. He'll admit to this. It was probably a weak area of his game. And when he got into situations where it was on a big golf course or the right situations, he'll admit that he needed to sort that out because it actually held him back. We talk about this three-wood session at the Masters, right? Again, that was if you're playing the Masters and you don't have a three-wood that you can turn over, you're giving up something. You've given up something to the field, and that's a fact. I mean, there's stories of players changing their whole game to fit that golf course. So John, and he'll be reluctant. So he'll be to a point where like at the photo shoot, before you show it to him, he'll say to you, I'm not sure on the three wood. He hasn't even seen the three wood because he's got something that he likes. I would say, and this is a big statement, right? This is a big statement, but I would say that John is tiger-like when it comes to fairway woods.
How so?
It ain't changing unless. It's right, man. It ain't going, he's no, and we, I think we've got such an amazing product in a fairway wood this year. I feel like we struck out with John this time and it'll be interesting to see what happens next time. But, you just think about it. I mean, we're getting, we've got a small amount of contracted staff players in the PGA Tour. If you get 30 fairway woods in play in a given week on tour, you have got a good product, a very good product. We're getting 60. And that Rory's difficult with him. Rory will tell you this is the best fairway wood he's ever hit. John will probably tell you the same. It's going to be an interesting one. He plays them on the upright side again. John's a huge unit. I don't think people actually realize just how big a unit he is until you see him in real life. The TV doesn't do him justice. So we work with different sleeves with John to get the lie angle perfect. We've got 1 degree sleeves, got 1.5 degree sleeves, got 2 degree sleeves, and that can create any face angle and lie angle that a player desires. Once we got him into the right setting and lie angle, and I feel like John's stock shape is left to right. He moves the ball left to right off the tee. I feel like our fairway woods, like, they're all the players who are really loving them, especially the sim product, they're using a little more loft. We all know that a little more loft helps you turn it over when you need to. Three woods, it's a big part of a player's arsenal to have a three wood that he can turn over. And I think these things really resonated with John. And that's why he put that in the bag.
Let's get into his irons. A part of his setup that, I honestly wonder if these irons are ever going to go. I mean, he's had so much success with them. From a spec perspective, is there anything different that Rom likes to see when he's setting his irons down? Does he do anything different to the soles on these, or are they pretty stock out of the box?
Pretty stock out of the box. 750, amazing iron TaylorMade have created in the 750s. I mean, and when you go into our new stuff, our MCs, you will see so many similarities between these 750s and these MCs. It's a real, I think it's the best iron we've ever made. And that's the reason not to really try and change a lot in that category of iron, moving into our new ones. They are, from Fran winning the open with them, we had a lot of kind of free irons out there, and a lot of them were these 750s. But, he's played PX65s, this straight in for a very long time. His spec hasn't changed a lot, obviously he's got that RSI, that old four iron right. in there, and that's actually at a 3-iron spec.
Is it really?
So it's actually his 3-iron. I mean, he wouldn't. John has no problem hitting the ball lower. He has no problem hitting the ball higher either. But if you asked him to hit any iron, if you asked him to hit any iron there under the table, he'd do it. No matter what iron it was, it's a sight to see, and it's seen. So I don't think, I don't know if you can ask me any more questions on these irons. There's nothing fixed up in the irons. It's just a clean set of irons. And I think something about these irons, John's played blades a lot. If you go back in John's history, he's played blades a lot. And this was actually like one of the first sets where he actually moved to something with a small cavity. And I always thought that these irons, they performed very blade-like for a blade player. And that's why you'll see a lot of the guys who play our 730s will probably move into our blades. They feel very comfortable in a combo set with a 750 long iron. There's a lot of similarities in terms of like what the player is feeling from a turf interaction standpoint. It's got a cavity, but it's kind of like more needled towards a blade in terms of just the edges and where the way it moves. John, he's tested blades. He's tested our 730s. He's tested those things. You can even hear it. He just gets a slightly better performance out of these, I think.
So you've mentioned a couple of times John Rahm is an absolute unit, and I would totally agree. What does he do as far as his grips are concerned on his clubs? How many wraps? This is kind of the nitty gritty stuff that I know a lot of golf fans love to hear. How does he set them up?
So it's a multi compound red mid-size one tape logo down. It's mid-size grip. What would people say? What's a mid, to get to a mid-size? It's like six to eight tapes or something like that.
Right.
He uses a Cadet large glove. So the glove fits really tight for him. It's like an extra layer of skin for sure. Adam, his caddy, we talk about this all the time, and we watching John hit drivers on the range weekly, and he'll stand there and he's setting up to hit his driver, and literally he's got this 75 gram stiff tip Aldila green thing in there. He's got this mid-sized grip, this huge driver head, and honestly it just looks like it's like he's in the kids club. He's got his hands are like right around this grip. And you know, he's just, and as he waggles, he doesn't waggle. You know, he's not, you know, Sergio waggles the club, all these guys waggle. John waggles it. You can see the shaft starting to play a little bit. He's ready to go.
Oh man. Seeing Rahm in person, I've seen him out there is a sight to behold, because you're right. He wastes no time pulling the trigger when it comes to, when he gets in the stance. All right. Let's get into the wedges, which I think is an interesting part of his setup. Is he really using a high toe in the 52 degree?
Yes.
What is the reason behind this? Because I know that he uses a milled grind too in the 56 and the 60. I can't imagine there's anybody else on staff that's using that sort of a setup.
Yeah. So it's just how it's fallen for some reason. We've built in them all and we've tested them all. And he just, like I say, said earlier, he doesn't give many shots. I guess he's hit the 52. He's probably liking potentially the feel or the way the crown sits in this club. But, you know, we've tested him versus our mill grind and potentially not seeing his windows or his start lines, and we're checking the lie angle, we're checking the loft, checking the swing weight, checking, you know, is the right, you know, you know, change the shaft. Maybe there's a variable in the shaft which we can't see. Let's put another shaft in there. And he just comes away and says he prefers this 52 in the height. So now the interesting thing when you talk about wedges, so we offer in our high toe, one of the latest additions, you know, the sole is it's a four-way camber sole,
right? Right.
Which is, it's a little bit wider and it's kind of, you know, rounded on the edges. That's John's input. That's John's, you know, the original high toe that came out, it had a very wide sole. It was an ATV kind of grind. And we had, what would happen is, you know, we would grind those away a lot. You know, Padraig Harrington gave us massive feedback on that. You know, DJ had his grind, Justin Rose had his specific grind, and we eventually we had all these SKUs of this wedge, but for each individual player, custom would stamp their name on it. And John's finished product actually made it to market. That was the one where we tested with people out, you know, where we tested it with all levels of golfers, and you know, that was one that just gave raving reviews constantly. So you know, I mean, when you talk about this 52 and a high toe that he plays, I mean, there must be something that he likes about that club because he's had so much input into it. But then you move on to the 56, which is an MG2, and now he plays the Tiger grind in the 60, the MG2, and
I wanted to get into that
again. It's you can see the pattern here, John. It's the guy's playing what he feels is best for him and what he chooses to play. It's not. We don't choose for John. John chooses for John. we just help him get there. And you know, it's I think when it comes to a 52 degree wedge, the best thing you're going to do is get him exactly the same performance, I think. You know, he's got the option to change the wedge whenever he likes. You know, so fresh grooves is not an issue. You know, durability is not an issue. All these things that potentially we've put into these MG2 wedges, which is great for the consumer, and getting the raw face and all of that. You know, John, that's John's performance is more than that. It's above that. Those things come easy to John because he's the number one, number two player in the world, and
How often is he changing out his wedges? I know some guys will change out certain wedges more often than others throughout the season.
So 60 a lot. 60 degree. I mean, he is the one player that legitimately burns through grooves in a 60 degree wedge. And when he asks, and when he gets a new wedge, he legitimately needs one. and that's, I mean, that's the truth, man. He's 60 degree when he goes through them. He goes through them, and so I'm not talking about a player just saying I need a new wedge. I'm talking about a player saying I need a new wedge, and this is why. And you can literally see he has burned through that wedge, and it's now time for a new one. And when you listen to him hitting shots in a bunker, I mean, I would love to do this. I'd love to make like a marketing thing where it's just a black screen and you just have a microphone listening to the sound of this guy go through a bunker session. It is phenomenal. And you
just,
can see just why thump, you,
just
why
thumping it, I'm sure.
Through the grooves on the wedges. If you imagine the sound of like a big piece of Velcro just being ripped apart, again and again and again.
It.
You know that sound, and it's just like, yeah. I'm trying to like create something which is similar to that. But it's like when you're with him and you're with him at the Open, and you're in one of these links course like bunkers, and you listen to him and you watch him hit bunkers, and then you go to like a resort with pure white sand in the bunkers, and you watch him doing that, and you watch him how he creates. I mean, I can tell you a story. We're at the Open, and he's in this pot bunker around the practice screen. And I mean, he's trying to hit a shot, to a flag, which is literally just over the lip downhill. I mean, with that luckiest shot you've ever seen. And John's sitting there and he's opening this golf club and he's hitting these flop shots out of a bunker, trying to get to this flag. Eventually he gets to a point where the club is so open, he can nothing else but hit the shank of the club. And then he turns around and goes, okay, that shot's impossible. That's basically what he's gone. Okay, that shot's impossible. But I promise you, he got 100% closer than anybody else could have in that field with pure with skill.
All right, the putter. I know this is Trotty's world right here, Chris Trott. Tell me, I'll listen to your Rom Wedge stories all day.
Yeah, this is it's so we were at Dubai, the race to Dubai final. So he wins the tournament and he wins the race to Dubai, he wins everything. But he gets there on the I think we did 18 holes on the Monday. Nobody on the golf course, nobody there. He just got there, he was just jet lag, just trying to get through the day. But one thing that he was doing was he had just come from the kingdom, hence the another he just come from the kingdom, and he had two wedges. So he had the Tiger wedge, and he had the Milgram two wedge in his full camber sole, which we spoke about. And a big part of this 18 holes was just to kind of make a decision on the wedge. So we go through, we get to he's trying both wedges constantly, you know, fringes, outliers, you know, out the rough, whatever. We eventually get round to 18 and he drops. So he's settling on the Tiger wedge and now he's just going to hit some bunker shots. So the pin on 18 is where the pin is on Sunday, and the bunker that he's hidden at is on the left of the green. And he's hit 50 plus bunker shots out of this bunker, same position, same pin. And I'm watching, obviously that one goes in play, but I'm watching the coverage at home. I get home, I'm watching the coverage and it's him and Tommy Fleetwood like coming down the wire. And Tommy hits this amazing chip shot from the other side of the water. And John needs to get up and down to win it all on 18 out of the bunker, same place, pin. And I'm just watching this on TV and I'm going, there is no ways in hell this guy doesn't get up and down out of here. And he's literally just gone and knocked it to a few feet and tapped it in. But he's literally, he had practiced that shot 100 times.
Good thing you did that. I gotta know, does Tiger give any of the guys any stick for using his wedge with his initials on it?
Not yet. We were just, I think we're just actually getting going with kind of that wedge on tour, not the tour championship in Mogo. So it's starting to get a bit of traction, but I know Tiger does it with the irons. I know he does it with the irons, so I'm sure he'll do it with the wedge as well.
is there a reason why? I mean, Rom had so much success with that spider red putter. I was a little bit surprised when he went to the chalk version. Was there kind of an impetus for him behind switching the putters?
Yeah, there was in Trude's John Rom fashion. There's got to obviously be a reason for him to switch something. And John's a very good putter. I think he's one player that, you know, you'll kind of, I mean, he ranks nicely in the putting stats and all your strokes gained stuff and everything else. But I think he's, and if you talk to his peers, they'll talk about it. He's a much better putter than all these stats even say. And I think it's got something to do with, like, all putters are streaky putters, you know, where some have longer good streaks and bad streaks or whatever. But I think everything, you know, kind of ebbs and flows. If John starts putting average, he very quickly starts putting good again. And that's what they appreciate. I mean, it's not that he's going and reinventing the wheel or changing anything. He just seems to putt good again very quickly. So, and he'll acknowledge that he's not putting well. And when you talk about the spider red putter now, and we talk about John being like a big unit, you know, John got into a habit of he was constantly bringing his red putter into the truck and getting the loft and lie checked, and he would and when we checked it, we'd be like, yeah, you know you're half a degree strong, it's a little flatter. He's also not the most gentle guy with his equipment as well, you know. So what would happen is that would create a pattern, and when that creates, and that kind of maybe put a little bit of doubt in his head, and just to be sure, he would check his putter every week now, loft, lie, and Wade on our truck, he said, listen, John, the more we constantly correcting your putter and bending it back, the weaker it's getting. You know, we should do you a fresh one or whatever. But in John's head, he was like, he still feels like he's going to need to check that every time with his putter, whether you bring him a new red one or whatever. And that was a big part of the switch. So he said, let me test something out. And that was his reason for actually testing the Spider X. And bam, he loved it. He absolutely loved it. I mean, it's a unique spec. He said, he's one of the only guys who puts orthodox, but the putter is not the shortest club in his bag.
What is he from a spec perspective? I was going to say, what is he length loft lie?
So it's a 37 cut. I think it's just a fraction over 37. It's 68 lie angle. So if you think of if you talk about a standard 35 inch putter, that would be like at 70 lie angle on average. Give or take a degree or whatever. But John's at 68, which is actually a little flatter than you would think. And it's longer. So it's flatter and longer. And that from a spec standpoint, I can give, you're looking at, uses that super stroke grip, it's about a 601 gram total weight, which is, again, it's a heavy, you know, like 550s, still heavy, you know. So again, it's that extra weight and everything like that. It's a Serlin insert, which is your soft insert, it's a short slant neck. So he actually played the copper one which was in his spec, right. And it had no markings on it at all. It was just like his red one. It was just no sight lines, no nothing. And then he broke it. He broke it, and then from there he moved into the chalk putter, which he now uses, and I tell you that this is some stretch of him. You know, you talk about holing out, and you look, you just to contemplate the putt he made at the Northern Trust. I mean, can
unreal.
Have you ever replicated it? Yeah, no, there's no fans, and I heard a roar. I heard like a huge roar. And it's like, I'm like, oh my goodness. Hats off to DJ who made one as well, you know, before. But yeah. So there's the putter. It's a unique, special piece of equipment in his bag, and it does have its intricacies and its quirky kind of lie angles and lengths, and it's Yeah,
in the insert too, the Serlin insert. I know the tour players, being tour players, get options with these inserts. He based on that Serlin, I would assume, likes a softer feel coming off the face.
So we're constantly trying to improve and develop these face inserts, which can help different players with the roll of the putt, get it online. The reason John plays that one is he played that in the Red Spider. You know, it's given him his same, you know, his same speed off the ball. It's the same feel. It's the same roll. It's very much. I think we've experimented with making the inserts a little bit fatter, a little bit thick, like say from 3 mils to 5 mils or whatever. He feels it. He feels it all. So the insert he plays is the original. It's the insert that he's always played. There's no funny business there.
And I would say arguably the most important piece of equipment in the bag, the golf ball, TaylorMade TP5. What's Rom like when you've observed him testing golf ball? You know, Tiger always talked about kind of starting close to the green and kind of seeing how the ball reacts. How does Rom test when he's testing out a new ball?
It'll be a time to putter. That'll be like the huge phase will be that. You know, he has the ability to spin the golf ball as much as he wishes. And that's something that in those irons, he'll need to really, you know, make sure that the ball's spinning correctly. I mean, he played the X ball for a long time, and it was always testament to the fact that he didn't need, you know, he could spin it. You know, the reason why some people play a spinny golf ball is because they need the spin. John was, you know, he had no problem chipping with the X. He had no problem hitting half shots or whatever. The biggest golf ball kind of eureka moment that we actually had with John goes way back, obviously, when we were trying to sign him. That was obviously, you know, us trying to prove to him that the traditional kind of golf ball that he had played his whole career was we had something that could compete with that, and for him being this high spinner, the golf ball, you know, finding performance. A little bit of this influence is you know, Tiger plays a very spinny golf ball, and he hits a lot of shots with you know, he hits a lot of shots and he manages spin very well. John in his development can also do that. But I must say that came as a surprise to all of us. When you act forward now 6 months or 8 months, PPX is characterized as low spin. And even tour players they think that the TP5 is characterized as the one that spins.
Right.
Where it's not that, you know, it's a five layer golf ball being hit at very different speeds all through around the golf. And once John realized that when he hit now this end of the bag at the top end of the bag, I think he was hitting with his driver, he was like 2 yards shorter than TP5X. And the spin rate was like 200 RPMs different. And TP5X it's got a huge reputation for being like the ultimate golf ball for your driver. It's high launch, it's low spin. You know what I mean? It's carry, it's roll, it's everything. And once these players were to realize that we've actually engineered into the TP5, people like Rory played the X, Jason Day played the X. You know, they're all playing the five now. You know, Justin Rose, and it's I think it's the best golf ball in my opinion, and I'm biased. I'm a tailor-made guy. I've watched these things be developed and made better, and I think TaylorMade have an unbelievable golf ball, and I'd put it up against any golf ball in the world.
It's awesome, Adrian. I really appreciate all the insight into John's gear. You gave it everything.
I mean, he's amazing to talk about, man. He's I tell you, at the Northern Trust, I walked 9 holes with him on the Tuesday, and I walked away. I went to Keith. I mean, when we finished, Adam said to me, his caddy said to me, "What do you think of that?" I was just like stunned, right? And because I'd seen him play a lot, and I walked back and I said to Keith, I've just witnessed perfect golf for 9 holes. I swear it. I've just seen perfect golf for 9 holes. This guy could have kicked in the ball 7 out of these 9 holes. He would have been 8 under or whatever, but it was just an amazing thing to witness. Because golf's not a game of perfect. And then to watch him go on and win, sent him a message, you know, I'm just saying, like, just by the way, on Tuesday, I thought you played perfect golf. And his reply was, "Yeah, played like that on Sunday." And I, And it's just, I mean, he's a great guy, and he validates our equipment the right way, because it's, if it's not right and perfect, and he's not going to use it. And that's cool. That's cool validation.
Yeah, certainly is. Thanks again.
Cool. No problem. You're welcome.
That'll do it for a special US Open edition of Fully Equipped. Thanks again to Adrian for the time and insight. If you're looking for more gear news, check out golf.com or our Fully Equipped social media handles. We're at Fully Equipped Golf on Instagram and at Fully_Equipped on Twitter. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week.